Welcome to Intuitive Eating for Christian Women. I'm your co-host, Erin Todd. I'm a writer and an intuitive eater.
And I'm your co-host, Charlie Castle, registered dietitian and exercise physiologist. We're here to help you discover whole health for your mind, body, and soul.
That's right. Our goal is to embody scripture, ditch dieting, and live on purpose.
Woo! Woo! Yes, girl.
Today, our guest on the Intuitive Eating for Christian Women podcast is Kristen Dovniak, and she's going to share about bringing back the joy in cooking and eating. Kristen Dovniak is the holistic health coach, certified intuitive eating counselor, and trained chef behind Healthy Balanced Mama, the podcast and brand created to help women stress less about food through balanced eating, simplified routines, and confident cooking. She encourages and inspires women worldwide to uncomplicate eating and find joy in balanced living through her digital courses, cooking classes, and top-rated podcasts. She lives off the coast of New England with her sailor husband and two little sous chefs. Before we jump into our conversation with Kristen, as a reminder, for all of our podcast episodes, this program is for informational and educational purposes only, and it is not a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice. Our aim, as always, is to introduce you to the principles of intuitive eating and help you to see how those principles align with Scripture so you can improve your relationship with food, your body, and God, and cast out dieting for good. All right, Kristen, good morning and welcome to the Intuitive Eating for Christian Women podcast.
Good morning. I am so excited to be here.
We are so glad to have you. This is like a big full circle God story moment for me because my very first podcast interview I ever did was on your podcast and we met through She Speaks unrelated background God story stuff. So I am feeling the feels this morning. So yay. Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to finally get to do this with you.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And your podcast is so incredible. I knew it was going to be. And I'm just so excited for you guys. And I knew when you hopped on my podcast, we had already had incredible conversations, just the two of us. But once we had that interview, it was like, oh yeah, yeah, her podcast is going to be incredible. So yes, this is a very fun full circle moment.
Thank you. You're so kind. The conversations we have are good because we're talking about the meaty good stuff, like the struggles, the victories. And you have such, I feel like I'm going to say this so many times during your story, but you have such a powerful story and I resonate at so many different spots. It's eerie. So if I keep chiming in with that, just be like, we know. Can you give us a history here? I want to hear about your God story and your food story and how those things intersect. So take us back to the beginning.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love this question because I don't talk a ton about faith on my podcast. It comes in because, you know, I am a Christian. And so I definitely bring on other guests who are Christians and we try to weave God into that. But I haven't had a ton of opportunities to share my faith story and really how that is interwoven with my food story, because it is so close, as you know, God works in everything, right? But it's really interesting. So I grew up in a very religious home, but not a spiritual one. So we were the family who went to church every single Sunday. We didn't miss a Sunday in the summer times. So we went to a church. It was kind of in the center of our town. And there was a little parish that was kind of right up the street from my house. And so we would walk up the street to church every Sunday morning. And I remember that being like a really positive experience. Oftentimes we would stop and get muffins on the way home. And so church was always a part of my life. And I actually ended up being an altar server as a teenager. And so I was definitely, and I helped with like a Bible camp in the summertime too. So it was definitely a part of the church, and I was a part of the church community, but I can never say that I really felt Jesus in my life. I never really felt that connection with him, and I was never really taught to kind of invite him into my life and invite him into my heart. It was just that church was kind of something that we did. So when I became a teenager, I started questioning things, as a lot of teenagers do. And I realized that I didn't necessarily have this connection with God in the way that I wanted to in order to continue to go to church. And so I decided, as a rebellious teenager, to leave the church. And so I was about 15 or 16. And I just decided, I told my parents that, you know, I'm old enough now. I actually went through the confirmation process at my church and then left, like, immediately the next week. I was like, nope, I'm done. And they just sort of accepted it. They were like, okay, that's kind of what you want to do. And I was away from the church for about 10 years. And it's interesting because looking back, I can see so many hints of God throughout my story, Him just being there right by my side during everything that happened between that moment where I was like, I'm not going to church anymore, and the moment where I really invited Him back into my life during my struggles with eating disorders, which I will obviously share with you guys. In my second year of marriage, when I thought my marriage was over, during a really, really difficult pregnancy with my oldest daughter, who's now 7, I remember praying. And I didn't really even know who I was praying to at that point in time because I was so far from God, from the church. But I remember going, okay, I need something in this. And so I remember being in the car on the way to a doctor's appointment, really nervous about what they were going to tell me. And I remember praying just quietly in my head. It wasn't anything I talked about with my husband. My husband didn't grow up in a faith-based home either. So it felt sort of strange to talk to him about the fact that I was praying, but I still prayed. And then a few years later, when my oldest daughter was still small, she was around 1 at the time. I was actually in the midst of my second struggle with an eating disorder, which I'll go into a little bit deeper. But I was about 25 or 26 at this point. So it was about a decade later. And I was starting to just realize that I didn't want to live like that anymore. And I was searching for worth in all of the wrong places. And I just started seeking. And I started searching out some books. And I stumbled upon a couple books that were faith-based. And I started reading them, and it was resonating with me. And it just kind of started to open the door for me a little bit more, remembering how I felt when I was at church on Sunday mornings growing up. And even though I might not have felt that deep connection with Christ when I was a young child, there was something about it that still felt like home. Mm-hmm. And so reading these faith-based books, it started to bring me just a little bit closer. And then I was actually working as a fitness instructor for this mom fitness company. And the woman who owned the company, she was very open in her faith. And she was talking one day when we were sitting after class together. We would do this fitness class, and then kind of all the moms would sit around and all of the kids would kind of run off. It was our little mom break time. And she was talking about something hard that she was going through in her life. And she was talking about how she had scripture kind of pasted in post-it notes all around her apartment. She had this tiny little studio apartment, and she's like, I filled it with scripture so that every morning when I went up to make my coffee, I would see it in front of me. So every time I went to bed, I would see it next to me. And I don't know what it was about. And like, looking back, it makes me like, I have all of the feels right now because I don't know what made me. I'm not the type of person to just reach out. Mm-hmm. I texted her later that afternoon and I said, can we meet for coffee? I want to talk to you about something. And clearly it was God working through that.
Yes.
Because I sent her this message and she was like, absolutely. And she was like, and I don't remember if I told her what it was going to be about, but it was like, he was like right there next to her because she knew. We sat down for coffee, and I remember my daughter, who was like, I think she was about 1 at the time. She like had her goldfish and she was sitting next to me, and we sat there and I asked her to share her faith story with me, which was also a bold move. So I asked her to share her faith story with me, and she shared a really hard past with me, some things that she went through that, you know, she felt a lot of shame around, and how her sister and, you know, some friends really came around her and assured her that, you know, God was waiting for her that, you know, Christ is there for her and ready to take her in no matter what her past looked like. And that was the thing that I had never really heard as a child, and that I had never really understood. I had thought for so many years that I needed to live up to a certain set of standards in order to be welcomed in by God. And I just believed that I just had missed the mark, and that I had gone too far. I have a pretty colored past. I had a really rebellious stage for several years. You know, I had abused my body for so many years with food or without food, and, you know, with other substances. And I didn't think that I was welcome. And she looked at me and she was like, "He's waiting for you." She's like, "Whenever you are ready, he's been waiting for you this whole time. It doesn't matter. He's like, he will wash all of it away." And she's like, "You don't have to decide now, but if you want to come to church, I would love to have you come to church with me." And so, funny enough, she was actually working at the time. I think she was an assistant at the time. She ended up taking over eventually, but she was working in the youth ministry at the church that she went to. And so she invited me to come to church with her that Sunday. And she actually didn't even end up being able to sit with me. So I came to church, and I was actually living with my parents at the time. It's a long story I won't get into, but my husband was immigrating from Canada at the time. So I was living with my parents, and I just asked them if they would watch my daughter while I went to church that Sunday. And they did. And so I just sat there by myself and listened to the music. And it was an incredible moment. It was almost from like that moment on, just being in that church again and feeling God surrounding me just through the music, through the sermon, that I didn't turn back. I kept going every single Sunday. And I think it was probably just a couple months later that I truly gave my life to him again. And really for the first time, really honestly for the first time. And I started a real relationship with him. And I joined a Bible study, and my husband came to faith several months later as well, which was crazy because he didn't grow up with any faith in his family at all. And it was, you know, life-changing to say the least, right? And it was more than I could have ever imagined as a teenager when I left. When I left, I had no idea that I could have such an incredible relationship with Christ and that he could be such a deep part of my life and my family. And, you know, as anyone who's had their own faith transformation understands, it really did transform every part of my life. And what was interesting is during this time, I think I mentioned, was when I was going through my second struggle with disordered eating. So to go into that just a little bit, if you're okay with me just rolling into that.
Go for it.
My relationship with food, growing up, it felt pretty normal for many years, I think. I grew up kind of an average family. We ate kind of your standard American food. I grew up with kid food. There weren't a ton of restrictions around food. My dad had this really beautiful garden. I can actually look out right now because I'm at my parents' house right now and see his beautiful garden that's just starting to bloom right now. And so I grew up with that. And it seemed pretty normal for a long time, but I did grow up with a very, very body conscious family. And with family members who were, I would say, very critical, maybe not meaning to be. And no one ever said anything specifically, you know, negatively about my body. It was always something that was talked about quite a bit, you know, the women's bodies in our families and wanting to look a certain way. And there was a little bit of like an expectation that, you know, if you looked a certain way, then you were better in some way. Right. And I definitely internalized that despite it not being something that was like directly ever spoken to me about. So when I was in, I was probably about 12 or 13. I went through a really hard season of my life. My family had some hard stuff go on. I was bullied at school, and I started turning to food being kind of the only thing that I had available to me and not really knowing any other positive coping mechanisms. I started turning to food to cope. I started eating emotionally, overeating emotionally. And it was already also during the time where a lot of young girls just gain some extra weight because that is the time in their lives where it's very normal for us to, you know, as women to put on extra weight when you're in kind of that, you know, puberty type stage. And so I ended up putting on quite a bit of weight. My clothes didn't fit anymore. I had to buy new clothes, but that was normal. I was a kid. You bought new clothes every year. And I didn't necessarily notice it right away. It didn't really necessarily affect me for about a year. And then it was the first day of, I want to say it was the first day or one of the first days of high school. And I remember being in gym class and we had to do this thing, which I always say whenever I mention this on a podcast, and I've never actually asked anyone if they still do this. I really hope they don't. But they do these like physical fitness tests and they weigh you and they take your height. And so I got weighed and they took my height. And I remember coming back with my little sheet of paper where they write your weight and your height down. And I sat down on the bleachers and I happened to look down at the girl in front of me and she's sitting just below me on the bleachers and I can see her paper. And in the top corner, it says her height and her weight. And she was the same height as I was, but I was 30 pounds heavier. And to me in that moment, it was like time stopped. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. Because if we're the same height, we're supposed to be the same. There is something wrong. And I didn't do anything about it immediately, right away. It was just something that turned into this sort of immediate feeling of self-consciousness. And all of a sudden, my size became something that I worried about, that I hadn't really worried about before. And another maybe year or so passed, you know, it's high school time. So I'm self-conscious and I happen to be, I was a martial artist for about 10 years. So I happen to be training for my black belt test. And during that training, we were required to do a ton of extra workouts, a ton of extra classes. So I was going to class pretty much every single day. I was at the dojo after school, have like an after school snack. And then I was training every single day. And just through that, apparently my body started to shift. And I say apparently, because I didn't even really notice that through this extra movement that I was doing, my body kind of started to shift. Very normal for somebody who's doing extra movement and I wasn't really paying attention to anything. I wasn't trying anything, but I walked into the dojo one day and there was two moms sitting there of some of the other kids that went to the karate school. And they looked at me and they were like, wow, Kristen, you look like you've lost weight. You look great. And all of a sudden I was like, I have. And all of these feelings that from, you know, going through some hard times and just being that kind of vulnerable early teenager, all of these feelings of, oh my gosh, you've achieved something. You're good. You're worthy. All of that came to me. And that was the moment where changing my body started to matter. Mm-hmm. And I realized that if all I had done was just do some extra workouts and I could change my body, well, then there was obviously more that I could do. So I ended up finishing my black belt training and it was quite a long time ago now. So I'm not exactly sure what my timeline is, but it was like that weekend. I was like buying magazines at the store that were like how to get fit. Like, you know, I'm not going to name the magazines because that's not nice, but you know, all of the how to get fit, how to change your body, started following these meal plans that are in the back of these magazines that tell you exactly how much you're supposed to eat. I started counting my calories. At the time, there were no apps for that. I bought a book that told me, you know, how many calories were in each one of these foods. And I started memorizing them. And all of a sudden, this was something that took over my life. And what's interesting is that no one around me necessarily thought that this was a problem at first, because it just seemed like it was something that I was interested in, which I was. And I told them that I wanted to go to school for nutrition. And so they were like, okay, they were on board with it, because I was all of a sudden, this was something I was interested in. I was getting healthy. but that interest in being healthy ended up spiraling very, very quickly. And within months, it turned into a full-blown eating disorder, where I was, you know, over-exercising and under-eating, and I got to a really, really unhealthy place. And this lasted for like 3 or 4 years until early college. And my best friend, who she was my best friend from high school, and she happened to go to the same university as I did. And she asked me to go to Starbucks one day. And I remember going and getting my coffee. The only kind of coffee I would let myself have is a black coffee with Splenda. So gross to me now, because that is not how I like my coffee. And I remember sitting down and she looked at me and she looked me in the eye. It was like, we sat down and she looked me in the eyes and she said, "If you don't get yourself help, I'm going to." And I knew at that point. I was at the point, I was actually going to school for nutrition. I was on the dietetics track at that point. I ended up going for sports nutrition. But I was ready to become a dietitian myself. And I knew that what I was doing wasn't healthy. I don't think I necessarily thought at the time that I had an eating disorder, but I knew that it wasn't healthy. And so I asked my mom to go to the doctor with me. And I don't think the doctor necessarily knew what to do with me, because I don't think she'd seen anyone like me, because I was like, oh, I still eat. I just, you know, I'm just very careful about what I eat and I'm in school for this and I love this. And she's like, okay. So she sent me to a dietitian and the dietitian gave me a meal plan. And I gained weight back. And once I had gained weight back and I was at a point where they thought that I was quote unquote healthy, they sent me on my way. But unfortunately, though my body was back to a point of being healed, I hadn't healed my relationship with food. And so I lived in this place of eating again and allowing myself to eat again and not exercising so much and not really wanting to get back to the place where I was, but really not having a positive relationship with food either. And so I went through several years of kind of enjoying food, but having this really kind of difficult on again, off again relationship with food, where I still spent a lot of time on diets and off of diets. I ended up going to culinary school after nutrition school because I decided that I wanted to teach people how to eat food that tastes good and it also nourishes them and enjoy food. But at the same time, I'm over here half the time I'm enjoying food and half the time I'm beating myself up over the fact that, you know, my body didn't look the way I wanted it to look, or that, you know, I wasn't perfectly healthy all of the time. But I wasn't necessarily in a place where it was a problem anymore for several years. Until I ended up having my first daughter. So like I mentioned, I had a really difficult pregnancy with her. And being someone who, you know, had a background in nutrition and a background in food, I was so sure that I would just have an easy pregnancy. I just assumed that I was young. I was like 23 and that I was healthy. And according to, you know, medical standards, that it would just be easy. It would be fine. And it ended up being really, really physically and mentally taxing and difficult. And I think I had felt like my body had betrayed me. So I was in this place for several years where I was pretty good. I was okay. I was still kind of fighting with my body on and off. But I was in an okay place until I ended up becoming pregnant with my oldest daughter, who is now 7. But I think for some reason that I just kind of assumed that I was going to have a healthy pregnancy because I was young and I was healthy by medical standards. And I ended up having a really, really difficult pregnancy. It was really taxing physically and mentally. And I think through that experience, I very much felt like my body had sort of betrayed me. Like I expected to have this pregnancy that was just sort of easy and that I would just be pregnant and then have this baby and that would be that. And it was not like that. It was a lot of doctor's appointments and a lot of fear and a lot of just feeling like my body wasn't working the way that I thought it should. And so after the first few months of just kind of living in a blur of newborn life, I did what society told me that it was time to do. And that is to get my body back after baby, because that's what you're supposed to do, right? There is some sort of assumption out there. And now I realize it's an assumption, but back then it just made so much sense that you lose your body when you have your baby and that you've got to get it back afterwards. And so I joined an online fitness program. And it was just a friend of a friend who was hosting this. I think I found her on Facebook or Instagram, one or the other. And it seemed like everyone who was doing it was having these great results. And for me, that meant they were losing weight and they seemed to be feeling good. And I'm like, well, all I've got to do is, you know, track some things and exercise a little bit more. And at this point in time, none of this was tracking with me that this is exactly what I had done years ago when I was in this place of disordered eating. And so I just went about and I followed this program and I followed another program and another program. And before I knew it, I had spiraled back into what I now believe was a relapse of my eating disorder. But it was just disordered eating with a different mask on. It didn't look the same way as my initial eating disorder did, but it was an eating disorder nonetheless. I was very, very obsessed with changing my body. I ended up actually doing a fitness competition. And it was during that time when I was training for my fitness competition that I actually was also going through this faith journey. And my friend had introduced me to her church and I had started going to church and I was a part of this Bible study. And I remember being in this Bible study and us talking about how much Christ loves us no matter what. And I wish I had like looked up what scripture we were studying or what it was, but I just remember this overwhelming feeling that I didn't need to be striving in the way that I was striving anymore, and that what I was doing was turning my body into an idol. But I was already so far into this fitness competition. It was like weeks away. Mm-hmm. And I remember doing this fitness competition, standing on stage in this like sparkly purple bikini. And I didn't want anyone to be there. I didn't want my family to be there. I didn't want my friends to be there. I stood up there feeling shameful, almost feeling like this isn't what I'm meant to be doing. This isn't what my body is for. And I ended up placing in that competition and I got second place and I should have been so excited, so happy because I've been working for it for months and months. And all I felt was this overwhelming feeling like this just doesn't feel right. And so a couple days after the fitness competition, I called my coach and she was so disappointed. And I told her I didn't want to do another competition. She was like ready to sign me up for the next one. She's like, you did so great, just a few tweaks and we're going to get you ready for the next one and you're going to place first. And I was like, no. I can't do this to my body anymore. And interestingly enough, about a month later, I had a massive health crash. And my body was just screaming at me. It was, I can see God working through all of this, right? It felt once again like my body had betrayed me, but I knew that it was me that was betraying my body at this point. I was not taking care of her. I was not honoring her. I was just trying to fit into this mold that I thought I needed to in order to be accepted, in order to be this fit woman that I had put myself out there on social media and to my friends as being. I had put all of my worth in the way that my body had looked. And through this health crash, I was forced to stop working out. I was forced to feed my body better and to really, really take several months of just nourishing my body and nourishing my soul. And I dug into scripture deeper than I ever had before. The only movement I was doing was going on walks. And I discovered intuitive eating during this time as well through, I was actually towards the end of my fitness competition. I kind of discovered an intuitive eating podcast that I started listening to, and I was starting to internalize it, but because I was still going through the fitness competition, I almost kind of didn't let myself really explore that quite yet. But once I had this health crash, which was basically just, I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, which was just, my body was exhausted. It was exhausted from so many years of just treating it the way that I was. And so I started exploring intuitive eating, and it took a very long time, as I'm sure you know, your other guests have shared too. It took longer to wrap my mind around the principles of intuitive eating than it did for my body to go, oh my gosh, this feels so much better. But I really honestly, I didn't look back once I started realizing that there was a better way to nourish my body and to honor my body and to start enjoying food again. Looking back and thinking about this incredible gift of food that God has given us and how it is so much more than just a tool, which is what I thought it was for so many years, right? It's a tool to change our bodies. It's a tool. You have to eat these nutrients in order to survive. It's so much more than that. It is joy. It's connection. It is sitting around the table with family. I remember there's one moment that sticks out in my mind. It was a couple of weeks before the fitness competition. And so I was in those final stages. For anyone who's ever done a fitness competition or anything of the sort, I was a couple of weeks before, and I had to be so, so strict with the foods that I was eating, and it was Easter. And I remember sitting around the table with my parents. I invited them over for brunch, and my husband and my daughter, who was about 2 at the time. And we were sitting around, and my daughter looked at me, and I had made this whole big spread because, remember, culinary school, I'm a trained chef. I love food and I love cooking it for people, but I wouldn't let myself eat it at the time. So she looked at me and she said, "Mommy, why aren't you eating this?" And I didn't know what to tell her, because I didn't want to tell her that I was trying to be healthy, because I didn't want her to think that's what healthy was. Mm-hmm. And I knew in that moment that I wasn't being the example that I wanted to be. I wanted us to sit around the table, and I wanted us to enjoy food together and break bread together. Yeah. as the Bible tells us that, yeah, we're supposed to do, right? We're supposed to sit together and eat together and share in that experience together. It's so much more. And so that is what, you know, the past several years now, it's been, 5 years now since that. And I can't even imagine going back to that place I was in. And so, I mean, God is interwoven in every tiny crack and crevice of that story and my broken relationship with food. And he really has restored an incredible relationship with food, which has opened up incredible relationships with not only him, but also the other people in my life, with my kids and with my husband. And there was a point where a doctor looked at me and she told me that I might never be able to have children because at that point I was really young and I wasn't sure if I wanted to have kids. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit angry with her because I'm like, who are you to assume? Mm-hmm. And I remember, just looking at my daughters now and looking at how thankful I am that I was able to heal my relationship with food enough to be able to really be there for them and to show up for them and to share this love of food and community, and being able to break bread together is just so incredible. So that was a long story.
But beautifully said.
So much love and good. Oh, so much.
It brings tears to my eyes, the conversation with your daughter, because when I think there's something that happens when you think about your daughter treating her body the way you were treating it.
Yeah.
There's something that shifts inside of you where you realize, I am lying to myself. This is not for healthy. This is not,
yes,
this is not positive. Mm-hmm. And then standing on that stage in the bikini, knowing this isn't it. This is not what my body was meant for.
Yes.
I just see God showing up so much in yes. so much of this.
Yeah, so do I. I don't think I knew the standing on stage moment. That's just so powerful. And that's the kind of lesson that, I don't know, I think there's so many similarities. And I think how our thought processes were, Kristen, that it's like sometimes you really have to get to that place to be able to learn that. And I really do see God in that, because he brought you to the point where you would feel something different about it. And that's powerful. Yeah. Like when your feelings change, mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty strong. And the feeling comment actually grabbed me too, because you said you couldn't remember what you were studying in that really pivotal Bible study. Mm-hmm. But it's like that comment that you hear about, you know, people don't remember what you say, but they remember how you make them feel, kind of thing. Yeah. So it's like, yes. it doesn't even matter like that you don't remember the words the Lord was using and what scriptures it was using. It's like you felt it. And that is, word is alive. And that is just, that was so powerful. I love that part of your story. There's so much here to unpack. Goodness. Oh my goodness.
This episode of the Intuitive Eating for Christian Women podcast is brought to you by our membership program. If you find value in what we're creating here on the podcast, would you prayerfully consider supporting us by becoming a monthly member? You can help support our ministry for $10 a month and get access to our members-only resource library, which includes the Health at Every Size book club resources. And you get an invite to our exclusive members-only monthly coffee dates. These are monthly Zoom calls where we get together and pray and share our intuitive eating journeys with Jesus. This is for you if you are looking for more interaction, fellowship, and accountability. You can check out all of the details on becoming a podcast member by visiting our podcast website, intuitiveeatingforchristianwomen.com/support. That's intuitiveeatingforchristianwomen.com/support. Now back to the episode.
I want to hear a little bit more about a word I heard you say twice, because I think a lot of people are going to be able to identify with this kind of feeling or sense that my body has betrayed me in that it hasn't met my expectations. And I want to kind of unpack that a little bit if we can. So I guess the place to start would be, what were your expectations and why did you have those? And like, let's just kind of dig into that. So maybe somebody listening who is feeling betrayed by their body, maybe it wasn't a pregnancy experience, maybe they've gained weight, or maybe they've lost weight because they're sick and they just don't feel like their body is doing what it's supposed to do. Can you just speak into that, Kristen?
Yeah. Oh, I know that feeling has come up in my life several times. And I think the expectation was that if I was doing all of the quote unquote right things, then my body would respond in the way that I expected it to. So in my pregnancy experience, it was, well, I was supposedly healthy before this pregnancy. So if I was healthy before, then there was no way I was going to end up with all of these health conditions and all of this fear and, you know, all of these complications. When it came to my weight, this was another place where, you know, when I would gain weight, which I would on and off and on and off. When I was on and off diets, it would be like, but I did the thing. I did the diet. Why am I gaining weight back? And it's so much deeper than my own personal expectations, because it comes from this, I believe it comes from this societal expectation that there are the right things to do, and that if you do them, then you're going to get the results. And it's rampant in our society that we, you know, there are so many people out there telling you that if you just do these things, then this is what your body is supposed to do, without the recognition that our bodies are all created uniquely different by God, and that we are all meant for, you know, we're all meant to have different body sizes. We're all meant to have different experiences. We're all meant to have different health experiences as well. And I've had two daughters now, and I had two very different experiences with very different states of health as well. And So I think the feeling of betrayal is something that I think I had to work through for a very long time, and recognizing that our lives are meant to be ebbs and flows of different seasons, and our bodies are meant to change. And, you know, it doesn't matter how hard we strive, you know, when we are fighting against our bodies, then it's going to fight back. Our body wants what our body wants, and we can lean in and we can take care of our bodies and we can listen to our bodies. But I think if we are just constantly in this place of just striving and having these unrealistic expectations for our bodies, we're going to stay in this place of feeling like our body is constantly betraying us. I don't know if that's helpful, but I feel like that's kind of where I was at with that.
Yeah. And it makes perfect sense. I have definitely experienced I've done everything right. Why are you betraying me?
Yeah.
Many times.
Yeah. Expectations. And like thinking about where they come from, thinking about why they are what they are, I think is just really powerful. And I kind of got to learn that, as I think all three of us have, like, let's see what this means in the arena of food and body. And then we get to go, okay, how else am I thinking about how things should, air quotes, be?
Yeah.
It's just so... the expectations that we place on ourselves. So somebody said, Kristen, maybe it was you, unreasonable expectations or just too unrealistic is what you said. It's like, why are we shooting for perfect? As Christian women, why do we think we need to be perfect? Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? That's a rhetorical question. I think just being really hard on ourselves and being unreasonable and unrealistic in what we think we are capable of is, at least for me, that was a take this to the full expression of my pride and what I can do and my strength, and I'm going to get this done. I'm going to do this right. And then I'm going to grab what's mine at the end of that. And it's just so, so me focused and so much pride in that for me. And whenever I think about expectations now, I always think about, am I attached to this particular outcome? And what does it mean if I get it or if I don't? So I think I haven't gone through a pregnancy, so I can't speak to this in pregnancy yet, but it's like when you expect something is going to go a certain way and you build something up in your mind, like, why? Why though?
Oh, yeah.
Can't you just be in the moment and be on the ride? I think something about our brains wants to have like a certainty there. And I think when we put an expectation on something, we're not leaving space for God to work. We're not leaving space for anything other than like a box to be ticked. And that is just so dangerous with food and body, because that's just not how it's going to work. Like you said, Kristen, like there are seasons, we are all different. Like even if I follow the exact same meal plan as you did and did the same prep work to do a fitness competition, we're not going to come out with the same results. Like, why do we think, these expectations like apply universally? They just,
it's funny, like, it's crazy how prideful we can get. I had the same experience, Kristen, with like crazy outcomes of pregnancy, my first pregnancy, like almost died crazy. And I, like half of the devastation was that it didn't go to my perfect plan of like this pregnancy and birth that I could have been proud of. Like, why do I need to be proud of the way that I gave birth?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what, it's crazy. All the things that we try to control, because it's in some sense that determines our worth, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm healthy and I have a healthy pregnancy and a natural delivery, I am worthy. But if I have disease or complications or illness and it takes medical interventions to bring my baby out and keep me alive, I am less than.
Yes.
Which are just like such big lies.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay. Kristen, I want to come back to you going to culinary school. That is just such a, I love that. Part of me wishes I had done that. Part of me goes, it's not too late. Go ahead and go.
It's not.
I want to know what that was like, what that experience was like for you, because you were coming into it based on the timeline that I'm tracking from your story at kind of maybe a complicated time still, but you had, and I can tell it in your face and hear it in your voice when you're talking about it, the joy and the appreciation you feel for food as, you know, the gift that it is. So, talk us through culinary school a little bit. I'm just so curious about how that went.
Yeah. Oh, well, I need to take you back to Italy before we get to culinary school.
Yes, please.
Because so I'm going to school for nutrition, and I knew that at some point I wanted to study abroad, but the opportunity hadn't quite presented itself yet. And it was literally, oh my gosh, a month or two before my friend had sat me down and told me that I needed to get help, that this opportunity popped up to spend a summer studying abroad in Italy. And I could get extra school credits, so I could get ahead and maybe graduate early. That would be exciting. And I had saved up some money working during college, and I told my parents I was going to go ahead and spend the summer in Italy. And God's timing is so cool, because it was about a month and a half, 2 months after I had really gone through that initial recovery from my eating disorder that I found myself in the south of Italy, living there for a summer, learning Italian, which was like a very basic Italian class. I still can't really speak Italian, even though I spent a summer there. But it was this incredible experience. And part of this immersive experience of living there for the summer was being able to take some cooking classes with the local chef that would cook our dinners at this restaurant we went to. It was part of the program through the school. We got dinners at this one restaurant every single night. We would all sit around the table and we would be served multiple courses. We would have kind of like our appetizer and our pasta and our main dish. And I remember walking in to this tiny little kitchen this hot summer afternoon, and this chef was standing there, and she was this tiny little thing and probably about the same height as I am, but I saw her as, I'm only 5 feet tall, so I'm pretty short, but she's this like tiny little thing, and you did not expect that she was this chef at this restaurant. She made this incredible food, and she could not speak a word of English, maybe a word of English. And so the one of the leaders of the organization that was leading the school program, he was translating for her as she brought us through how to make pasta carbonara. And she is standing there, and she's just cooking the pancetta in the pan, and then taking it out and carefully putting it on a plate. And then she's adding that hot pasta to the pancetta and adding that whisked egg with the Parmesan and tossing it together, and then just adding that little bit of pancetta on top. And what's interesting is at the time I was a vegetarian. I still wouldn't allow myself to eat meat. And I looked at that and I was like, it's got meat on it. And I looked at my friend. This is the same friend who had really helped me in my darkest days. And we ended up going to Italy together, which was such a blessing. And she was like, you've got to eat it. I was like, I'm going to eat it. And just watching the incredible simplicity of these simple ingredients and putting them together and tasting that incredible dish, I was like, I need to learn how to do this. I didn't grow up with a mom who cooked a ton. She cooks a lot more now that I've shared recipes with her. She didn't really cook a ton. It was just kind of eating to live. And other than my dad's garden, we definitely didn't eat gourmet food growing up. And it was that moment where that little bit of this inspiration was kind of sparked in my mind. And so I went back to school and I did the school thing, and I met my husband the next year, who wasn't my husband at the time, but we started dating. And interestingly enough, he is Canadian. And so he had to go back to school once he graduated, or go back to school, back go after he graduated from school, he had to go back to Canada. You can't just stay here as long as you want, unfortunately. And so he went back up to Canada. And so we did the long distance thing for a while as I finished up school, but I needed a way. I wanted a way to get back up there to get up there to be with him, because we weren't quite ready to get married. Flash forward like 6 months later and we ended up getting married, but that's another story for another day. So I decided to apply for culinary school. And so I ended up going to this tiny little culinary school in Toronto, in Canada, moved my entire life up to Canada and ended up, you know, getting married and living up there for about 5 years. And I remember getting my uniform in the mail, you know, the whites, your chef whites with the black check pants, and putting them on and feeling like nothing had felt more right in my life. And my whole life, I just thought that, you know, I was meant to go to school and have this career. Like, that was just what I thought I was supposed to do, right? I come from a family of medical professionals. And so that was just kind of the thing that I thought I was supposed to do. But like that uniform, it felt right. And so it was about a year long program where I learned how to cook. We did about a month of pastry, but I was never really into pastry. I'm definitely not the baker. It was all about the food and just being immersed in the flavors. And there was another chef who had a huge impact on me. The first was Rosa at the little restaurant in Italy. And the second was Lesha. And she was one of the three chefs that owned this cooking school and were also the chefs. They were culinary Olympians. Like, they were incredible chefs who had kind of had their careers, their big careers. And now they had started this cooking school. And she just absolutely, the other chefs were incredible too, but she just had this incredible, she was an incredible chef, but you could just tell that she had this incredible relationship with food. She loved the flavors. She was so passionate about sharing the different techniques and the different flavors. And you also like did not mess around with her. Like, she was, again, this is the one woman in this big cooking school. And she was incredible. And I remember just wanting that sort of relationship with food, wanting one where it was about enjoying it and eating just enough. And, you know, she wasn't gorging herself on the food that we gave her to enjoy. She was just tasting it and savoring it. And she would never talk about like how eating this food was going to change her body and we spent quite a few hours every single day with her. I never heard her make a single comment about that. And obviously I didn't know her personally, but there was something about her and something about that experience that really, really helped to move my relationship with food in another direction. And food is something that I've always loved. And I've always loved how much, like I mentioned, just sitting around the table and enjoying a meal with people that we love and people that we care about can just, the food can transform the experience. And I think learning about that in culinary school was one of the experiences I'm most grateful for in my life. And it's something that I bring into my work now about a year ago. So I've been spending the last several years, you know, coaching in intuitive eating. And I love sharing about intuitive eating. But I really felt the spark to bring some more of that joy in cooking and food kind of back into my business. And I've taught some online cooking classes. And I am just so excited and passionate about sharing that joy of food and cooking with people, because I think so much of our society is so focused, like we've talked about, on food just being a tool to change our bodies or something that we have to eat in order to survive. But it's so much more than that. And I think that's really what I got from that experience in Italy and that experience going to culinary school and then working as a chef I worked as a personal chef for about 4 years before we ended up finally moving back to the States and being where we are now.
I love that. I totally think it makes so much sense how being around a chef and just kind of experiencing that leadership in the kitchen and learning from somebody like that would just, you would naturally be drawn to that. I love that the Lord put that teacher in your life at that time. That's so, so powerful. That's amazing. I totally want to celebrate the development of your palate and the different flavors and the textures and all of that chefy stuff, the foodie stuff that I think is just completely lost in dieting and in the way a lot of us cook. Even those of us that aren't maybe we've moved past dieting now and we've been intuitive eating for a little while, something about cooking, I think, can be really intimidating to people, or it can feel like a chore, or it's just like, I can't, like, I just can't, I'm too tired, I don't care. How, speak to the woman who needs some inspiration, Kristen. Like, what would you suggest? What would your encouragement be for somebody who maybe doesn't enjoy cooking so much, but they intellectually, they get it. Like, they hear us talking about how wonderful food is. They're like, I want that. I'm just not there. What can we encourage her with?
Oh my gosh. I love this question. I think it just starts with allowing yourself to appreciate the food that you're already making. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be complicated. And I talk a lot to moms because I am a mom myself, and most moms want something. They want to be able to cook something that's quick and easy, and that hopefully Sure. their kids will actually eat too. And so when I talk about food, I love talking about bringing in new flavors and tastes and textures and temperatures into our food to create these incredible experiences. But in our everyday homes, it doesn't have to be something that it feels like we have to have this crazy culinary experience every single time we sit down to eat. And I think there's a little bit of a misconception sometimes around intuitive eating as well, feeling like every single experience needs to be this perfect experience, or we're Yes. not doing it right. But we can appreciate every meal that we have. We can start to consider just savoring our food a little bit more. What does that mean to you? What does it mean to savor your food? Maybe you are working a busy day and you've got like 15 minutes for lunch and you don't have time to sit there and close your eyes and savor every single bite of your food. You've just got to eat it. And that happens. That is a very normal experience. But maybe you can just take a second when you take that first bite and consider the flavors in that food. Consider if you like them, if you are enjoying them. Consider the textures that pop up when you are eating your first couple of bites of food. And just start to appreciate the beauty of food and the incredible variety of flavors and tastes and just experiences that we can have with food that God's given us just from the very simple foods that He has put on our planet that chefs oftentimes transform into these even more incredible experiences. But even just something as simple as dipping a cracker into some hummus, or having a really great cracker with a really good piece of cheese on top. That is simple food, but it can be an incredible experience. The creamy, salty cheese on top of a cracker that is crisp and crunchy and might have its own flavor, maybe a little bit of graininess to it, or maybe it has a little bit of rosemary in it. So you're getting a little bit of that. Even just taking a moment when you're having your cheese and crackers to just consider what comes up for you and how you can just notice it. And I think noticing it and starting to appreciate it, even if it's just a bite or two, can really start to bring out some more of that, I think, appreciation for food. And then when it comes to cooking in the kitchen, I'm so big on, you know, simplicity and just tuning into what you love. And if you might not know that, especially in the early stages of intuitive eating, you might not actually know what you enjoy and what you don't. And something I've said a couple of times on podcasts before that people are shocked about and some people are offended by is that I learned a couple of things in my early intuitive eating journey. One of them is that I really don't like ketchup. I just don't. And I know that there's a lot of ketchup fans out there, and I'm sorry, ketchup fans, but I don't like it. And so I'm never going to make a burger with ketchup, but a burger with a roasted garlic basil aioli, yes, please. Uh-huh. And so that's what I love, and that's what I prefer. And so we can just start to notice, what are our food preferences? What type of cuisines do we lean towards? And just start to, you know, find some recipes or find some foods. Doesn't even have to be recipes that we really enjoy, and just start bringing them in one at a time. And you'll start to increase that appreciation with food. But I think it's about not putting too much pressure on it and just bringing in that appreciation of taste and textures and flavors and allowing yourself to enjoy it and to experience it, especially if you're someone like I was and didn't for so long. And I think that probably the saddest part of my, honestly, of my intuitive eating, or not pre-intuitive eating journey, of my dieting journey, is so how for so many years I didn't allow myself to enjoy food. It was all about tracking and measuring and making sure that I could, you know, put it all in my app. Mm-hmm. And I lost so much of that joy with food. So how can we bring those little bits of joy into our everyday meals and just start to appreciate it a little bit more, I think. And then we can get to cooking. You don't have to love cooking or go to culinary school in order to appreciate food.
Yeah, I think that's such good advice. It takes me back to like when we talk about gentle nutrition or like re-exploring food, like what's one little thing, like what's one food that you want to add an experiment with? Like instead of thinking, oh, I want to cook and picking three dishes you've never made before, like why don't you pick one ingredient to explore? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that first bite is going to be really mindful and you're going to savor it. I think we often go like big, we get in our head. I definitely tried to do intuitive eating like right for a while, right? Everything needed to be mindful and the whole thing. But if you just start with one little thing, and as simple as cheese and crackers and noticing the tastes and the textures and the flavors and what you like, it really is like some massive joy that can come about from appreciating food and recognizing it as a gift, even if it's like the macaroni and cheese from the box that you're making for your 2-year-old.
Yes.
Yeah. I can personally attest to cheese and crackers. That has been my quarantine snack of choice. And we've gone the whole spectrum of making our own pimento cheese, which I'd never made before, with garden pimentos, to realizing that there were probably one or two brands we really liked, one from one store, one from another. It's just like appreciating the diversity of this with the same cracker. And it's just been like, what a delightful little snack thread through quarantine. It doesn't get any more simple than cheese and crackers. It's been such a delight to just really enjoy that. There's so much enjoyment in food, and I'm so glad for your perspective on this. I feel like a lot of intuitive eating encouragement kind of goes over the practical of eating and cooking, and it's more mindset of health and body. And I think the practical eating experience and cooking experience is so key in our daily living that if we miss this piece, we're just not going to get the full experience here. So, so it's so nice to hear it expressed so beautifully. And it just, your passion for food is so obvious and I so enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
So we want to wrap up with some fun little questions here, I think at the end, Charlie, if you've got those ready.
I love this question now because you talked about how you hate coffee. I too used to drink coffee the way I hated it. So our first question is always coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
Well, I do like coffee. I just don't like coffee that way. I love coffee so much. If it's a really, really good cup of coffee, I will drink it black. If it's a really nice, because I enjoy the flavor of really good coffee. But typically our average coffee that we get, I like coffee with a little bit of cream first thing in the morning. It's beautiful, and heavy cream, because I like it. I like creamy.
When Aaron and I first had this conversation, it was like 20 minutes of us like, well, when I was doing this diet, I had coffee this way and this way and this way and this way. And I actually really like my coffee this way.
Yes.
Yeah. What's an unusual food combination that you really enjoy?
Unusual. Oh my gosh, that is such a hard question for me. Because I'm not sure. I think it'd be easier for me to say what I don't enjoy, because there's not a lot that I don't enjoy. So I really enjoy a lot of Asian style cooking, even though I am not Asian myself in my background. And so I didn't really grow up with it a lot, but my husband is half Japanese. And so we have explored a lot of Asian cuisine kind of together. And so I don't necessarily think it would be kind of unexpected in Asian cultures, but there are a lot of food combinations that are just not common here. I love teaching cooking classes and introducing people to fish sauce, mm-hmm. which most people are like, ew, gross. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? Honestly, it does smell kind of stinky, but the flavor that it adds just a little bit to the end of your green curry, just stirring that in, simmering it for a couple minutes, it adds a salty sweetness and an umami, which is that savory flavor, yes. that just cannot be beat. And so I think I love exploring just different cuisines and different ingredients that might not be so common.
Yeah.
And so that's my roundabout answer to that question.
I love it. Okay. Before nutrition took your interest, what were you into?
Oh my gosh. Like, what did I want to,
back in high school that you got interested in nutrition?
Yes. What did I want to be when I grew up?
Yeah.
Okay. So I come from a family of pharmacists. So I did think I wanted to be a pharmacist for a while. And then my aunt, who's so sweet and she's an incredible pharmacist, she brought me to work with her one day and I sat there and I watched her count pills all day, and she loves her job. Like she's retired now, but she loves her job and she does great at it. She loves interacting with the people. But I thought it was the most boring thing in the universe. And I was like, I am not going to 5 years of school for this. So that was actually where I thought I was going. And then I ended up going to school for nutrition. So.
Well, thank goodness you had the forethought to like actually go see what a job in this field is like.
Yeah, it would have been a very expensive situation if I ended up going, oh, nope, I don't like this.
Oh my gosh, so funny. Okay, the first thing that you saved money for that you can remember, like as a kid, the first thing you saved money for and bought.
Oh, I love this question. I think the first thing I remember saving money for was CDs, because I had gotten a CD player for my birthday. And so I remember saving up for CDs, and I can't even, it was like NSYNC or something like
that.
But I remember saving up for CDs. Yeah. I don't even remember what I was doing, but I was to make the money, but that's what I remember saving up for.
I love it. Okay. And your first car?
Oh, it was a black Camry. And we named it JB, but I can't tell you what that stands for because I was a teenager and it was inappropriate.
Yes. But you have to name the car.
Yes. I was just going to say, wait, but did you name it? Thinking I was the only one that did. That's hilarious.
Yes.
Oh man, that's so funny.
I love it, Kristen. Thank you so much for being so candid and open, and what an awesome conversation. And I feel like I want to talk to you for 6 more hours about cooking and culinary things. So that needs to happen someday.
I would love that.
Yeah. So can you tell everybody where they can find you online and where they can watch your cooking classes and just all the things? Where are you at?
Yes. So the easiest place to find me is over on Instagram. I'm at Healthy Mama Chris. And my website is healthymamachris.com. And so I'll do cooking classes over on Instagram. And then also in the coming months, I am also going to have some full length cooking classes coming up as well. So that's happening very, very soon. It'll be sooner than I know it. So those are the easiest places to find me. And then I also have my own podcast, which is the Healthy Balanced Mama podcast. As well.
Yay. I cannot wait for these cooking classes. I need some new recipes in my life, and I know you are the one to bring it. So I hope this is going to be coming out so much later, but I'm sure your cooking content is going to be there, and I want everybody to check it out. Like, let's get in the kitchen, y'all. Let's have some fun. Let's enjoy our food because it is a gift.
Yes.
And Kristen, do you want to close us in prayer?
Yeah, I would love to.
Thank you.
Father God, thank you for this conversation today. Thank you. Thank you for bringing each and every woman who finds this episode and who discovers this podcast. I pray that every woman listening to this and listening to every episode will be touched by the teaching and by the stories on this podcast from its hosts and its guests. And that through each of these, that they'll be brought closer to you, Lord, and further from the throes and the false promises of diet culture. We know that our worth is in you, Lord, not our bodies, not the way we eat or the way we move. And I just pray that each woman listening will be inspired to honor her body well without obsession or restriction and just begin to find more joy in the gift that you've given us through food to nourish us, to provide pleasure, enjoyment, connection, and to share love. And most importantly, share your love through time breaking bread around the table. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
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 Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope this episode has been a blessing to you. It was brought to you by our online course, Ditch the Diet Masterclass. If you are ready to break free from diet culture and being a slave to the scale, it's time to ditch the diet and reclaim your body and your life for God's purpose. You can learn more and sign up on our podcast website, intuitiveeatingforchristianwomen.com. That's intuitiveeatingforchristianwomen.com. We'll see you in the next episode.